fit for death.
Wrong, wrong, wrong! Quadruple negative! Central has always wanted what we can now give them. Now we can finally destroy it all. The evil will be purged, the land cleansed by fire, and by the horsemen of disease and pestilence.
You'll wipe out the few survivors of the madness of the Long Chill?
They will welcome our redemption.
A vile death!
They are not worth the saving.
Some are. Jack slid his hand around toward a concealed dagger.
Move your fingers another millimeter and your instant dusty soup. Good. Now we must know what you've been doing. We know you've terminated our Sekhmen, but we lost you as you came to the research section. What have you done? What can you hope to do? Why check us in our central blessed designs? Do you not see how grand is our aim here?
My friends and I go around the Deathlands, and there's times we do us some chilling. There's those that need it. And I like to figure the world's a touch better as we pass on by. I heard someone once talk about the darkness on the land, how he hoped to hold it back some, like carrying a sword into the sunset. Maybe even carry it on through to a dawn. A new dawn. Sound fucking stupid to you? Sure it does. But I'm for life. You're not.
Ryan's eyes involuntarily widened as he saw Dr. Theophilus Tanner appear around a corner like a ragged angel of vengeance with his 200-year-old Lama pistol.
You blind cretin! I'm for...
The back of Dr. Tardy's head sprayed all over the room.
Shit.
Rot in your own hell.
A brief and vicious firefight with a dozen of the Mutie Sekhmen slowed them a dangerous few seconds. Fortunately, Ryan's party took no casualties and were finally in the elevator, climbing fast toward a fresh Oregon afternoon. The ascent took precisely 85 seconds more than the descent had taken. The box of dulled steel seemed to rise with agonizing slowness. Once, when they were near the top, the elevator shook, rattling against the sides of the shaft. Ryan checked his chron. JB did the same.
Huh. Couple minutes early.
Can't trust old Plas.
When they got to the top, it was a beautiful day. The sun beamed down from a cloudless sky of unsullied azure. A hawk floated majestically between the peaks away to the west. The bowl of mountains around Crater Lake was topped with a frosting of snow, but the air was warm and fresh. The main entrance wasn't guarded, and there were several of the amphibious boat wags on the ramp under the shadow of the jagged rocks that concealed the complex.
Look at the water! It dances!
They looked. The impenetrable deeps were a rich blue, normally placid and calm. Now the water was rippling agitatedly, tiny waves rising and breaking against one another, and lapping at the stone ramp like thousands of little sucking mouths.
I can feel it and hear it.
Christie's head was cocked to one side. Her crimson hair shone like strands of fire in the sunlight.
The bomb's going?
Sure, can't you hear it?
The Wizard Island Complex for Scientific Advancement was buried so deeply that not even Ryan's keen hearing could detect anything happening. But he could feel it. Through the thick soles of his combat boots, he could sense the faint susurration that was coming through thousands of feet of rock.
Best go. Who'll drive?
Normally it would have been Finnegan.
Me!
Jack leapt into the control seat, his snowy hair blowing in the light breeze. Away above them, Ryan noticed a small herd of deer running fast over the gray pumice slopes, their sharp hooves kicking up powder behind them. It looked as if something had spooked them. The pink eyes of the albino spotted a faint trail that climbed the steep sides of the basin around the lake, and he aimed the amphib at it. He lowered the wheels as they reached land and gunned the motor to force the amphib up among the trees. Behind them, the surface of the water was becoming more restless as whitecaps rippled the rich blue.
Jack, stop the wag!
They had just crested the rise and reached the blacktop that had once carried camera-laden tourists around beautiful Crater Lake.
Fire blast! Look at that son of a...
The water was beginning to bubble, almost like a monstrous cauldron approaching a boil. A snaking tendril of smoke or steam escaped from the dark entrance to the complex. Even from where they stood, it was possible to catch the sound of distant explosions, sounding as though they came from a limitless distance beneath their feet.
Is it going to go?
The volcano?
Yes, Theophilus, Fire Mountain?
It just might be.
The etched lines about the old man's eyes were showing the strain they'd all been through. Ryan glanced back once more. It had been an odd firefight. The odds and the technology had been overwhelmingly on the side of the scientists and their Mutie slaves. But they had lost the art of fighting. A handful of determined people, armed with what to the scientists were primitive weapons, had utterly defeated them, destroyed them. As they drove away from the beautiful country and weather around Crater Lake, they passed immense numbers of animals and birds, all fleeing south, away from the doomed redoubt. A dozen mutey timber wolves, their leader nearly as tall at the shoulder as a man, looked contemptuously at the small group of humans, then moved on at an easy lope, ignoring them.
Wish we could have taken that molecule destroyer thing you spoke about.
Doc Tanner heard him and grasped the armorer's lean shoulder in a bony hand.
Don't say that, my friend. If we have done our work well, then that place of hellish enchantments will be buried forever and a day, until the dead rise gibbering from their graves. That's best.
Glory smiled winsomely at him.
Like you said, the only good scientist is a chilled one.
The little boat made good speed over the bumpy roads. It seemed to have a kind of floating suspension that carried them smoothly over the worst bumps. Since none of them knew how the silent engine functioned, there was a very real danger of running out of whatever fuel powered it. To be stranded in that fiery cold wilderness could have meant death. It was near dusk when they reached the friendly ville of Ginsburg Falls. Everyone ducked low, and Jack gunned the motor, pushing their speed up to around 50 miles an hour. They heard shouts and what might have been a blaster falling away behind them, but no harm was done.
And so we say farewell to Ginsburg Falls, nicest little town in the West.
They pressed on through the valley, following the blacktop as it snaked higher and higher. The skies were darkening, with deep crimson chem clouds soaring toward them from the far west, bringing the threat of a severe storm.
Not far to go. Follow the trail and watch for the fork up to the redoubt. Save having to climb all around and go through those bastard tunnels.
They were lucky. It was so dark that only Christie's part-muty vision spotted the blur of the road. Jack turned the amphib, angling carefully around the jagged boulders that had fallen from above. For the first time, the engine was making noises, a faint, angry whirring that didn't bode well for continued progress. Fortunately, they reached the main entrance to the redoubt within a quarter of an hour. The massive doors were closed, the metal scored and pitted from the efforts of generations of muties to break them down. Doc clambered out and stretched, knees and shoulders creaking.
I do sincerely hope it's the usual 352 code to open her up. Don't much relish making like a mole to go back into those holes.
352 did the trick, enabling them to trigger the colored lever beside the control panel. It was a tribute to the technical skill of some of the pre-chill engineers that the door still worked. JB and Lori kept watch against possible attack by the small, muty killers who nearly wasted them when they'd first arrived through the gateway. But the slopes of the mountains were quiet and deserted.
Let's go in.
Sure, but... holy shit. Look at that.
Everyone turned to look where Ryan stood frozen, staring north toward Crater Lake. The earth was exploding. Mount Mazama had been awakened from its long slumber, provoked into a violent eruption by the bombs and fires that Ryan and his companions had triggered far below the deep blue waters of the lake. Flames and lava jetted thousands of feet into the night sky. Even at that distance, they heard the bass rumbling of the mountain heaving itself into destruction.
Hell of a funeral pyre for Finn. And couldn't ask for a better memorial.
They watched the spectacle for several minutes until the extreme cold began to bite deep. It felt like around 50 below, with the wind bringing it another 20 lower. Ryan felt the hairs in his nostrils clogging with shards of ice.
Western wind blowing, Mr. Cotter. Time for us to hie ourselves to another place.
They progressed through the long-abandoned redoubt toward the Matran's gateway. At the back of Ryan's mind was the staggering story of Doc Tanner. His actual age, the fact that some gateways could be used for time travel if their secrets could be unlocked. It was something to think about. Leading the group, JB paused as they reached the familiar sign. Entry absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel. Matran's. The vivid red armored glass walls of the chamber glowed to greet them. The discs of polished metal glittered brightly in the ceiling and on the floor. Jack entered first, followed by Lori, both of them sitting down with their backs against the walls, legs stretched out. Doc sat next to Lori. JB hunkered down, cross-legged, pulling the brim of his fedora over his eyes, like a man on a stoop, readying himself for an afternoon sleep. Christy sat next, resting her chin on her arms, looking up at Ryan, who stood by the door, ready to trigger the mechanism.
I'll miss that fat old bastard Finnegan.
Me too, Christy.
We all will. Everyone ready for the jump?
Of course we are, lover.
Good. Then here we go.
He pulled the chamber door firmly shut, hearing the mechanism click into action. He quickly sat down by Christy, holding her hand. Doc had his arm around the slim figure of Laurie. The lights began to brighten on the discs, and the walls darkened.
If they're the future, they can fucking have it.
Ryan felt his head beginning to throb with the building pressure of the jump. As he started to slip away, he heard Doc's quavery voice.
Western wind, when wilt thou blow? That small rain down can rain. Christ, if my love were in my arms, and I in my bed again.
The blackness spread slowly through Ryan's brain. The last few days had been as bad as anything he'd ever known. Wherever the gateway took them, it had to be better. As his eye closed, that was the last thought Ryan Carter took with him into the swirling dark.
Deathlands Crater Lake is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Kate Torrey, Nanette Savard, Christopher Grayville, Michael Rapogel, and David Coyne. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Dan Smith and Brian Patton. Script adapted for graphic audio by Bill Campbell. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com. Emerging from a gateway, not far from the ruins of New York City, Ryan decides to put his own house in order. It's time to avenge the deaths of his father and older brother. Accompanied by his companions, Ryan Carter comes face to face with the harsh reality of post-nuclear America. In the Deathlands, honor and fair play are words of the past. Vengeance is the word to live by. Deathlands number 5, Homeward Bound. Available now in graphic audio.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
At the turn of the 22nd century, Ryan Carter and his band of post-nuclear Holocaust survivors are about to come face to face with a specter from the past.
What do they look like?
Hard to tell with all the dust. About 30 riders in a double column on horseback, blue uniforms with a yellow stripe down the side of the riding breeches. The guy in front's got a blue flag with a golden 7 on it.
Out of the swirling dust that was once New Mexico rides a regiment of pony soldiers, led by a man with flowing yellow hair.
By the three Kennedys, we've cron-jumped. That's General George Armstrong Custer and the 7th Cavalry.
Brandishing sabers, colts, and Winchesters, the horsemen intend to destroy the ragtag strangers and their newfound allies, a tribe of Apache Indians.
Company, fire!
Deathlands number 6, Pony Soldiers. For Ryan Carter and his companions, the Deathlands just got deadlier.
Deathlands number 6, Pony Soldiers, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting January 2020.